The Bizarre Cast contains adult themes and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another episode of The Bizarre Cast. And I think by the time this will air, this is actually the fourth anniversary episode to some extent. And with me today, the esteemed Martin Adel Smith, and we will today be talking about his new venture into the world of music. Martin, welcome back to the show, old friend.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a long time.
It has indeed, and you were my second guest of the show, and at the time we're speaking of your literary ventures of the Spirals of Danu. So would you like to introduce your new facade today? What are we going to be talking about?
So the new project is called Skorum, S-K-R-O-U-M. You can find us all across social media as Skorum Music. And Skorum is an old Viking word meaning I invoke. And it's based all around the Scandinavian folk tales. So lots of songs about Thor and Odin and Freya.
And your new debut album is going to be Freya's Song. Would you like to describe the genre to people? I've certainly had a listen to the whole thing and I'll reserve judgment for now. Would you like to explain yourself in your own words?
So a couple of years ago, a friend on Twitter got me into Russian shamanism, sort of drum circles and sweat lodges. And when I started to look at some of the anthropology of that, I didn't realize that the Siberians had got into what is now modern day Norway and Sweden and taught their drum circles to the people who followed the way of the sky gods and the land gods. And I really sort of took this idea and ran with it with Freya's Song. So in Norse mythology, there are actually two sets of god. There's the Æsir, who are the likes of Odin and Thor, and they're the sky gods. And you've got the likes of the Vanir, which is Frey and Freya. And these two clans went to war. And there's lots of stories about that. Eventually, it ended in stalemate. And to agree the truce, they swapped hostages. And the twins, brother and sister, Frey and Freya, went to live in Asgard as hostages. But while they were there, the sky gods recognized that the lady Freya had incredible magical powers through drum circles. And she taught these powers to Odin.
So it isn't necessarily a drum circle album. It's very sort of I sort of described it as music that you'd have an orgy to in the forest.
That's an excellent description. Can I nick that and put that on the marketing?
Yeah, I think you can. I think it's the most accurate representation of the music. And I think just to give people a taste, you can listen for yourselves. Words can only describe so much. So I think we're going to open with The Calling. So check it out and let us know what you think down in the comments after the show.
Deny what she has made. Where Pterodactyl she has raised. Tell me, can you hear her? Freya calling. Can you hear her? Freya calling. Can you feel her? Freya calling. We can hear her. We can hear her. Freya calling. Freya calling. Freya calling.
So that was the calling. That was a bit of an experience. Martin, can you talk us through that song?
So the entire album is set up as a magical ritual. And it looks, first of all, at hallowing the space and drawing a circle. And after that, it begins with bringing on the goddess. And the calling is about addressing the goddess directly, calling on her for her powers, calling on her for her blessings. And you can actually hear the female vocalist just in the background on that, who's my friend Samantha Oxborough, who's a classically trained opera singer and has lent some of her vocals to the rest of the album.
I would take the whole album as, you've actually done this, which I haven't heard from an album in a long time. You've crafted the whole album from track one to, is it track 10?
That's right, yeah, track 10.
Yeah, so track one to track 10, you've crafted a story. This is definitely a tale being told, and it does ramp up. Did I pick up that correctly?
Absolutely. Sort of, you know, my father got me into music, and he was really into the concept albums of the prog rockers. So he was really into Yes, massively into Roger Waters, and he liked albums that told a story. And this is kind of where I took my inspiration from. My first musical awakenings were sitting on my bed with my headphones on, poring over a lyric booklet, looking at who had done the sound engineering, looking at who the producer was. And it was an immersive experience. The music was just a part of that. But I really got into the album and the art and the story. And I could just play a record over and over and over again and just get so much out of it. And that's very much what I wanted to do with this album, that when you listen to it again for the second and third time, you start to hear different instruments and different layers that you hadn't heard on the first listen through.
Yeah, no, because I did comment to you as I was listening. I was listening more to the actual backing beat, and I did suggest maybe that you could come out with just a cappella, is when it's just voices, instrumental version.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of, I mean, of the album, I think that would be a great addition.
If there's the demand for it, we'll certainly do an instrumental version.
You have the demand of one. I think it's just a case of going in, deleting the vocal track, and saving it there.
If it was that simple, I'd happily do it. But I sent everything off to a friend of mine who lives in Amsterdam, and he's done all the mixing and mastering on it. And we're really happy with the way that he's turned it out.
It's an interesting listen. Admittedly, full disclosure, it wouldn't have been my first choice of genre if I was making an album. But it's certainly, because I was recently listening to you on the Wattcast talking sort of about the music. And sometimes if you listen to music that isn't really your taste, but kind of focus on it, that you do begin to enjoy it. And I think at the start, because when you sent me the first sort of snippet a few months ago, one of your first completed songs, I was like, ooh. And that's when I made the orgy comments. And then when I actually listened to the whole thing, there was more of the full picture emerged. I was like, oh, yes, this is like telling a story, and this isn't just one song after another song. You do have to sit down and listen to it in one go to fully appreciate the music, I think.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself listening back to your
your own music? Or
yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we had the masters back, we had a listen party with a couple of friends, and yeah, it was definitely one of those that you had to sort of sit down and listen to it all the way through to understand each of the steps that the character was taken and how the reaction was to the Norse goddess Freya and how that all pieced together. So I would describe it as that this isn't pop. There are no 3-minute songs on here. It's a 3-course meal that you sit down and you're in for a long haul to enjoy.
Yeah, it's sort of, like, I don't know much about it, but it sort of reminds me, especially since it is of Nordic inspiration, like of berserkers, that you're taking some elixir of debauchery to make you go mad. Admittedly, I haven't taken any psychedelics in my life so far, but it's definitely something you could see yourself falling into trance. I think you're a man of the esoteric, given the subject matter that you write about as well. Was this something that you wanted to invoke? Clearly, I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested in esotericism and theology since about the age of 7 or 8. And my parents would often recount the story that I gave them a scare that at the age of 7, I asked for a Bible for my Christmas present. And they were terrified that I was going to become a priest. Why this would terrify them, I don't know. But they were worried about it. And I've dabbled in various faiths along the way. I've dabbled in Christianity. I was into Buddhism for a while. More recently, I was into the way of Baha'u'llah and Baha'i. And I really...
And the Order of the Hexagon as well.
And the Order of the Hexagon as well. But I really come from an omnist point of view these days. And what I mean by that is that I see certain truths, certain universal truths in all the world's faith. And the way I would describe it is that the universe is a vast and infinite ocean, and we are waves on that ocean. We're all sort of expressions of the divine. When the Bible says that God made man in his image, that's what it means. It means that, you know, we're all made from the same stuff. And this really fed into the album that, you know, I was looking at the stories and the lessons that the poetic and prose Eddas were trying to teach. I was looking at the sayings of the Havamal. And at the same time, I was also seeing certain resonances with Japanese folk tales and some of the South American folk tales as well. And there seems to be repeating themes that come up in all these faiths. And I wanted to bring that all together in this story.
Yeah, because listening to the album, it's definitely, I love the rawness to it. And as I was saying, that I loved just the beats in the background. Where did you sort of pick up the inspiration? Or were you just bashing away? Is there proper musical quality to it?
So about a year ago, a friend of mine knew that I was casting about for ideas for a project. And he said, have you heard of this band called Heilung? And I was like, no, not heard of them. And he sent me a link to a show that they did online. The show is called LIFA, L-I-F-A. You can find it on YouTube. It's a free show. And it is one of the most maddest things that I've seen in a long time. But it absolutely works, and it works on every sort of level. You've got about 5 or 6 men all smeared in mud and blood, and you've got a woman in a blindfold wearing deer antlers, and they're all sort of chanting away, working their own magic. At the time that I saw this, I was absolutely blown away. I hadn't seen anything like this, because it was more than the music. It was a performance. They were actual characters. And so when I was looking about for my own persona, I came from the point of being almost like a pagan priest. And if you go online to any of the social media channels, you'll see pictures of the pagan priest with animal skulls, deer drums and lyres and that kind of thing, because to get into this music, you have to enter the character. It's not just something that you can sit and listen to, because you won't get the full effect of it.
No, exactly. I mean, I really, as I said, I was glad that you had sent me just it out of sequence before, that I got the taste before actually sitting down to the full thing. Because I think if you had just been telling me like, oh yeah, I'm making a little bit of music, and I had no idea, and you just threw that album at my feet, I were like, Martin has lost his mind.
Well,
which could be true.
There's an argument that I never had my mind to start with.
Because you did mention that you live in a bit of a conservative area. I'm wondering, did that drive you a little bit more, that you felt a little bit like dirty, that you're sort of in this conservative area, that you're like, I just kind of want to be the defiant one?
I would say no. Now, I'll sort of qualify that by saying I have two girls, 9 and 6, and my wife is a conservative Christian. I'm really, really not. But we rub along, and I believe in about finding your own way. So for the last 2 or 3 years, I have just been reading lots of Norse mythology, lots of anthropology, and really getting into it. And I hope that when my girls come of age, if they're interested in a spiritual journey, then I've got loads of very wacky books that they can start with. But it'll be their journey. I can only take them so far. And for me, it's the same, that I've believed different things and different expressions of certain ideologies over the years. And right now, this is where I am. I'm deeply into sort of the Viking stories and the Viking myths. In 5 years' time, there's a very strong likelihood I'll be into something completely different. And I'll be making music to reflect that standpoint.
Like, I mean, just given that there is a bit of like the drum beat aesthetic, have you used music to get into a trance state at all? I know that is a thing. I have not tried it.
Yes.
Have you dabbled?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when I do my meditation, I sit in the dark. I have a little candle in front of me and I just have the drum going. And just finding my own beat and my own rhythm to it, and doing that for 20 minutes, half an hour, it's great. I actually recommend it to everybody.
So you're actually playing the drum, is it?
Yeah. All the instruments that you hear on the album is me. So I'm the lead vocalist, I'm the main drummer. There are some keyboards in there as well. There's a zither, which is kind of like a lyre, which can be bowed or plucked, but it's all me, and you know, this is sort of 6 months of my life.
No, it's very impressive that you've done the whole thing together. It's like your man Bjork. He just does everything. Have you always been a musician then beforehand?
I've always played the guitar. My first love is rock and heavy metal, and I really liked the thrash side of things for a while. So bands like Fear Factory, Machine Head. I then got into sort of female-fronted goth rock, bands like Lacuna Coil and Within Temptation. And then I got into some of the goth dark rock, Fields of the Nephilim, Sisters of Mercy, Paradise Lost, those sort of things. But I feel that those genres are becoming a bit stale. They've said everything that they've wanted to say, and the genre at the moment is starting to sound like each album kind of sounds like everyone else and the one that came before that, and there's just nothing new. So I didn't want to do something which everyone will go, oh, that sounds exactly like whoever else, because what's the point in sounding like everybody else? I want to have my own distinctive voice, and whether it fails or whether it succeeds, at least I can say it's individual.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to someone this week, in fact, about music these days is almost like overproduced. We were talking on SoundCloud that it's usually a place for artists now that is more like a testing ground. Yeah. So you might get just like an unpolished, more raw version of a song. And then the album comes out and it's like, hang on a second. This is like, has an extra instrument. They've mellowed out the bass, you know, and it just sounds, it actually ends up sounding worse. It's happened definitely on two occasions that I can think of that I was like, oh, I really like this song. And then the album has come out from the artist and I'm like, what, this has turned into a pile of shit. Like they've changed the tempo or they've added extra tracks and cut out sequences. It's very annoying, actually.
In a way, the music industry has become a victim of its own success. That if you were to look back 30 or 40 years ago, if I wanted to make this album, I would have to stump up 20 grand, go into a recording studio, spend maybe 2 or 3 months as a resident in that studio, laying down all these tracks with a sound engineer and a producer. And that's the way the system used to work. Today, I can have a digital studio on my PC for $99. I can have all the mixing and mastering plugins for another couple of dollars. I then just need to pay for instruments and a microphone. And I mean, this entire project has cost me under £500. And it's raw because I want it to be raw. I want people to feel, whether they like it or not, it almost doesn't matter, as long as there's a reaction to it. And you see now that there are so many bedroom artists, bedroom mixers, bedroom masterers, but they're all using the same plugin to get the Billie Eilish sound, to get the Taylor Swift sound, whatever the current pop fad is, that's what everyone's going for. And no one's brave enough to step out and go on their own path.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, hey, I was listening to someone who was mentioning Billie Eilish started in the bedroom, but it was actually you on the Whatcast.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, there are great musicians. I really like David Gray, and I think David Gray's first 2 or 3 albums were all bedroom albums. And I think he actually lost his record contract and then came up with White Ladder, which has got This Year's Love on it, which is an amazing, beautiful romance song. And he did it all on his own, and more power to him. But it is individual and it does stand almost entirely on its own. There's nothing else like it. And that is something that I think he should be applauded for.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you do produce something, especially when it's art, that you don't want to become like self-derivative. But then at the same time, like, I don't know how Coldplay keeps reinventing themselves, even though it's the same sound.
Yeah.
And Maroon 5 has managed to like go through their dodgy, like early noughties phase into now they're just really popular, more like dance tunes and stuff. And it's funny how some people stick for a long time and then others just fall into obscurity. Like, I really like the first MGMT album when it came out, like early noughties as well, and their stuff after that, then they went in a different direction. So I was like, oh, I don't like this new sound that you've tried to do. So it's, well, kind of funny.
It's very, very difficult. The story that I give is that the week before Nirvana's Nevermind was number one, Status Quo was number one with their album at the time. I've never heard that album, but I can instantly tell you exactly what it sounds like. And it's the same with the Coldplay albums as well. I know exactly what a Coldplay album is going to sound like. And I think there is that core audience who wants the same thing, but slightly different each time. For me personally, that would get boring. I don't like to listen to the same album. I like to go out and break new ground. I've started to pull together material for album number two already, but I'm already adding in different things. I've gone out and I've learned how to play the Russian bass balalaika, which is a great ethnic instrument to learn. I'm learning to play a different kind of zither. I'm learning to play the Indian simdal. And, you know, it's a way of evolving your sound and still sounding fresh while telling the stories that you want to tell.
Do you know what you might actually like? And it is as ethnic as you can get. It's an Irish percussion instrument called a boron. And it's
a lambskin stretched over a circle, and you hold it. There's like a cruciform at the back for holding.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I've got three of them. And
oh, right. So you're well versed in those.
So that's what I'm playing on this album. So,
very good. The Irish connection.
There's there are some very remote villages in the Irish Republic where they have the bodhrán, and allegedly they play it
Boron.
But allegedly they play it with a lamb's bone. They use a lamb's bone as the beater.
I'd believe it. Yeah, that's and probably from the same lamb that they use the skin, maybe.
Yeah, and they have all the Kaylees you like with that, and play the accordion.
Good pronunciation. Yeah, I like it. You're playing it.
But yeah, no, it's a fabulous instrument. And
do you warm it up in front of the fire first so it gets a little bit softer? Do you do that?
Absolutely. I've got a lovely stove fire.
That's good.
And yeah, that's how we get going. But it was interesting to see just how much what is today the Irish Republic influenced
it's actually just called Ireland. That's your English bias now.
Sorry.
When I hear people saying, oh, Southern Ireland, I just want to shoot them in the face. it's
please
Ireland.
Don't shoot.
Yeah.
But no, I was reading some books that allegedly Dublin was founded by the Vikings, and for a couple of centuries it was actually a major slave trading capital, and you had all the Irish sort of coming around and becoming merchants around the slave trade, and then influencing all the Scandinavian countries along the way.
Possibly. I mean, there is the other theories, I'm not too sure the validity of them, but the Irish being slaves, if not indentured servants. But the reason Ireland never became a full slave trading port when the English were in the slave trading was they didn't want Irish people to become merchants, that they might actually get some wealth from the trading. So there was
Is that
different.
Right?
Yes, it was a case that there was certain classes of ships and you weren't allowed to dock in Ireland if you're like a slaving ship, because they didn't want industry to build up around that because it was so lucrative.
Interesting.
So more suppression of the English on the neck of the Irish.
The English
but
just
we didn't want to profiteer off slaves. Let's be clear. I don't think anyone wanted that, and I don't encourage it either. that should be obvious. So I think, since it's actually been a little while, let's us jump into another song and what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you fancy?
So I think I'm going to implore you that we listen to Implore. Here it is, guys.
I'm so tired of all this fear. Traitor hearts coming all too. And if you could see, this world's not meant for me. Why can't I find my place? The sweetest part that time could not erase. When I look to you, a strange reaction. Wheaton spears are true, a strange inception.
See destruction of your life. Is it easy to believe in me? I'll never walk away from you. You're never far from home. the structures of your time. Is it easy to believe in me? I'll never walk away from you. You'll never fall alone.
And that was Implore. Do you have any little story about this one, Martin?
So Implore comes at the midway of the album. And this is, so the way I describe it is that there used to be a very rich tradition within Norse shamanism, and it was all oral. Today, that got lost during the Christianization process, and very little, if any of it, was written down. So for the last 200 years, starting in sort of Victorian Britain, you've had a reconstructionist approach to Norse religious practice. And the way they describe it is something called UPG, which stands for Unverified Personal Gnosis. And it means going into a trance and having your own direct relationship with the gods. And that is really what this song is about. It's about having gone through hallowing the circle, calling the gods, venerating the gods, offering them the sacrifice, to actually getting that moment before your chosen deity and admitting all your imperfections, and that deity then becoming your strength and supporting you through it.
Like, it just reminds me, really, I would assume, but I don't want to assume, because assume makes an ass out of you and me. Have you read any of the works of Aleister Crowley then?
Yeah, so I've read quite a lot of the works of Aleister Crowley, and I'm kind of on the fence. I put him into sort of almost the mad genius kind of category. I genuinely believe that he did have a divine experience when he was in the pyramids. But I think it was a message for him. I'm not sure if it was a message for all of us, but he made it a message for all of us through sort of his Church of Thelema. But he was massively influential. He's still influential today. One of his followers who I do adhere to is an artist called Austin Osman Spare, who came up with sigilization and creating magical intent through little drawings and little doodles and helping to get into an ecstatic trance that way.
Yeah, because I've only read Magic, that book, and I have more actually on the Kindle that I bought recently, but I'm struggling to get through Lord of the Rings at the moment to finish that. So the point I was going to make, really, I felt that book was just thinly veiled self-help book. It really was, if you shaved away all the magic stuff, it was just a self-help book. So what you were saying with the song, just to get you in the mood for basically like meditation and have like that positive reinforcement stuff of like willing things from the ether for things to happen. Like, it is still a form of prayer. I think that's why people pray. I think that's why there is religion. I think it's humans' way of trying to make sense of the world and to calm your mind as well, to pray and to give you sort of hope, because the saying, where there's life, there's hope. You actually, if there wasn't hope, you might as well everyone jump off a cliff like a lemming, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, as humans, we do seem to be unique amongst the animal class that we do pray. And we were talking before we started recording about the Fortean times, and there's a channel on in the UK called Blaze, which is basically Fortean times on TV. 95% of it I don't agree with, but they did have one episode, and it was about human ritual and prayer. And they said something very interesting. And he said, out of all the animals that are on Earth, mankind appears to be the only one that looks up, that looks to the stars to try and find some kind of meaning for the chaos in their lives. And I thought that's very true, that for whatever reason, we do seem to reach for something beyond ourselves, something that is otherworldly. That can be absolutely anything you like. There are 100 different names for it. But certainly implore is about the actual meeting, that if you reach out and you've grasped and now you are confronted with that majesty of the divine.
Yeah, because recently I was listening to Joe Rogan and he had Graham Hancock on. And
oh, yes.
For those who don't know Graham Hancock, he's sort of not an alternate history. He's sort of an alternate perspective type chap. And I found it very interesting. They're actually talking about not ancient per se, but ancient in ancient Greek, of basically in prayer and in ceremonies, there was a lot more use of psychedelics that maybe has not been, well, has actually been covered up, I would imagine, over the years and been commercially packaged by different religious institutions to let there be priests and the whole priest thing of you can't have the experience yourself. It needs to be sold to you by the Sermon on the Mount sort of thing, like the actual priest. So it was very interesting. Listen, did you listen to that one as well?
I have very mixed feelings about Graham Hancock. So he wrote a couple of famous books. I'm just looking in my library. Fingerprints of the Gods was the big one. And I totally bought into it. I was, you know, I can see how the pyramids would become resurrection temples. I can see how they line up to the stars of Orion. And I see that. The problem comes that I then bought the couple of books that followed on from that. And one was called The Mars Mystery. And in that, he suggested that there was a face and a pyramid on Mars and that human life was seeded from that planet. And when obviously NASA took some updated photos.
I was obviously deep in his drug phase, I'd say.
Big time.
That's why he's discredited now to a large extent, I'd say, for pulling out books like that.
Yeah, it just didn't stand up. And the book after that was called Talisman. And what he did, he suggested that a secret society had rebuilt Paris after a major fire. And he then drew lines between certain landmarks to say that these were geometric shapes signifying this secret society. But the buildings that he picked were just totally at random and ignored all these other buildings that had gone up at the same time and had the same architect. It just wasn't credible for me. And for me, that was kind of when I fell away from him. I understand that he's wanting to sell books, and I understand that he has been on his own spiritual journey. He's a big proponent of ayahuasca and cannabis. Works for him, happy, that's great. But I would take what he says with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, no, it's, as I was saying, it's more like an alternative perspective stuff. It's always good to get a different look at things. I think in that latest episode, it was really more looking at things through a different lens that it's like, yeah, is that plausible? It's like, yeah. And I mean, the thread line, it was fairly convincing. But, you know, we don't have firsthand accounts from that long ago. That there wasn't much diaries being kept. It was hard to know.
His main area of focus is that he believes there was a mother culture that was destroyed in some kind of cataclysm and the refugees spread out all over the world, and that's how we get man today, effectively. I'm I'm kind of on the fence about that. I haven't come down either way. But if you have a look on his Facebook page, he does actually post very credible articles from leading journals about how stuff does seem to be getting older and older and older. That, you know, we thought that the oldest pyramid was 5,000 years old, and now there's a pyramid coming out in the Philippines which could be 25,000 years old. And he is good for doing that kind of research, but when he pulls it together in a book, he does exclude some evidence which doesn't do him any justice.
Yeah, sort of on the mother civilization thing, have you ever come across the book Civilization One by Alan Butler and Christopher Knight?
I've not read that. No, what's that about?
So it's really, they go through, and just looking at the reviews today, because I read this when I was a teenager, it doesn't seem very credible, some people might say, but it was basically going back to the origin of like weights and measures sort of thing.
Okay.
And they traced it back then, like if you look at the dimensions of Stonehenge and the ratios of the blocks when to, it was basically like getting where a foot came from was from the stars, like lining up the stars and stuff.
All right.
And it basically sort of concludes at the end then that there might have been like the first civilization who sort of passed on the celestial knowledge to people. And it wasn't necessarily suggesting ancient aliens, but maybe it was. I'd maybe have to reread it. It's a very short book, maybe like 200 pages maybe.
Okay.
You should give it a look. I think you can get it on Google Books.
I'll look that up.
Civilization One, I can send it on to you after. Genre is controversial literature. But it was definitely a fun one to read at the time. Just again, I'm naturally a skeptic, so I love reading all these things just like with a little pinch of salt, as I said, just alternate perspective more so than actually drinking it all in, because I don't subscribe to anything. I don't believe the news half the time because it's all bias. It's all profit driven now. It's very hard to parse anything out that is a fundamental truth. It's very hard to even say that 2 + 2 = 4 because Big Brother would have you believe it's 2 + 2 = 5. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a bit mad these days, but we can only try our best. So speaking of Stonehenge and ancient stones, how about we move on to our third and final song today? We don't want it all given away for free today, Martin. So I think we should play Raise the Stones. Here it is, guys. Have a listen.
Where we belong.
And that was Raise the Stones. I hope no one found that erotic and raised their own stone. Martin, what's your little story about this one?
So Raise the Stones is about a Viking burial site in Norfolk in England, UK. And the site is called Sutton Hoo, and there's quite a famous helmet that came out of it. And Hollywood will have you believe that all the Viking dead were pushed out on a Viking longboat and it was set fire to. And actually, there's very little evidence that that actually happened. But what they did do was bring the longboat ashore, embalm the noble on it with his weapons and some money, and then they'd cover the whole thing with earth. And obviously, this was pre-Christianization. So the Sutton Hoo site is something in the order of about 1,200 years old. And what made it so unique was that in addition to laying the earth on the buried boat, they also put stones around it in a semi-Stonehenge kind of way. And so the story is about a man who's saying goodbye to his lord as he's raising the stones all around Sutton Hoo.
So given that you have been studying the different musics of the ancient worlds around, and given your own mixed heritage of English and Persian, and there's quite a lot of beautiful music from the crucible of civilization itself over in Persia, why did you pursue Nordic music as opposed to maybe English or Middle Eastern?
I think there's two reasons for that. First of all, sort of the Nordic artists that I came across. We've spoken about Heil Lung. There's another band called Wardruna, another one called Runehild. They produce this beautifully atmospheric, ethereal kind of music that I just hadn't had before. And it was music that absolutely grabbed me and made me want to listen. Particularly Runehild, who does sort of Norse shamanism in a very airy, floaty kind of way. If you remember Enya, it was that kind of music, but with frame drums going. So I really wanted to sort of immerse myself in that kind of scene. I'm already starting to pull together material for the second album. It's going to start to draw in other things. Like you said, I've got the Middle East connection. I've got friends and family who are in North Africa and out towards the Far East. And we are now, through the power of Spotify, swapping playlists. In the days when you used to swap tapes and say, you know, you got to listen to this. This is now what we're doing with Spotify playlists. And I'm starting to hear some interesting stuff that's coming out, and like going, yeah, that's kind of cool. I want to get more into that or a little bit of that. I still absolutely adore film scores. In recent years, video game music has come on amazingly. There's a composer called Mark McCann, who I'm really, really into, produces sort of science fiction kind of soundscapes that could be used in Blade Runner or 2001. Yeah. And I'm listening to all these kind of things where I'm starting to pull together for album number two.
Okay. Yeah, no, definitely. Because just this year alone, I've been doing a lot of Duolingo, just trying to learn new languages. And, well, not new. I'm actually relearning, if not learning for the first time, Irish. So I'm sort of getting re-immersed in my own culture. I don't know, is it a symptom of maybe a homesickness? I don't certainly feel that consciously, but just to get in touch with my roots. So that's why I asked the question, because I've certainly got a little bit, I wouldn't say obsessive, but there is an ancient Irish, it's not a language, it's written down, but sort of ruins called Oum. I don't know, have you come across that?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, so it's like very interesting. It's just like scratches and marks, and you can really fall down the rabbit hole of sort of ancient, just ancient traditions, ancient music. And I'm glad that you've taken up the mantle. It's very niche, but I think someone needs to kind of keep the traditions alive. So I commend you for that one.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, you've raised two very important points there of sort of wanting to connect with your roots. And that really gets back to sort of, you know, one of man's primary drivers is to ask the questions, who am I and where do I come from? We want to understand our ancestors, and from understand that, we would then want to project forward and understanding what we will become. And the Norse traditions, same as the Japanese traditions, are very much about ancestor worship and venerating those who have gone before and understanding that their fate is a part of our fate. And this is something called the weird, and it's all about frith weaving and the orlog, and in, you know, combining your luck with another house's luck to produce children who are going to be lucky and have a better fate than you might have yourself.
Mm. No, definitely. No, it's good. It was a really interesting album. It's definitely opened up my eyes a little bit more to different music. On the Discord every week, like I tried to put in a song of the week that I've been listening to on repeat. Sometimes, not always, a belter, I must admit, but there's certainly like a theme of music that I like to listen to, which is like very mellow 80s sound, pretty much like either synthwave or vaporwave, like 80s revival stuff. And I wasn't even born in the 80s, but it was definitely the sound of the 90s because it just has that echo, as most things do. But yeah, I'm definitely trying to listen to a little bit more stuff. It's good to get variety. You can be eating the same thing all the time and you kind of get sick of it, as you were saying. It just all
Absolutely.
Sounds the same.
Yeah. The way I describe it is that it's good to be weird. Can you imagine how boring it would be to be normal?
Yeah, of course. I'm quite straight-laced, so I'm not going around in a rainbow pants or anything like that. And clown shoes.
Give it time.
Yeah, haven't lost my mind yet, 9 months in pretty much this pandemic. But I don't think I've gone an episode yet in the last few months that I haven't mentioned it, but there we go. So, Martin, I think that about sums up the feeling of the whole album today. 100%, and we've given people a nice little listen. So if they did want to pursue getting the full experience, I know you have something brewing at the moment and you've put me under the pump to get the edit turned around very quickly, so thank you.
So we have an Indiegogo campaign running to get CDs printed. As I said earlier on, sort of, I believe in the whole immersive experience of having a physical product and pouring through the lyric sheet and all the studio credits. So we are running an Indiegogo campaign. If you go to indiegogo.com and just put in Skorum, S-K-O-R-U-M, we will be the first campaign that you see. We are sitting at about 1,700 UK pounds, which is just over 3,000 Aussie dollars. We are double funded already, but there are still some special perks available. If you want t-shirts, we can do that for you. We're doing hoodies, doing limited edition exclusive art prints as well, which you can all see up there. You can find me on all the social media at Skorum Music. If there's something that you want that isn't on the perks, just message me and I'll see if I can arrange it for you. And otherwise, just listen to it and have a good time.
Exactly. And I don't think I'd have talked to you unless you did get funded, because I've been burnt in the past, as I was saying. Speaking with people who are talking a load of nonsense that never gets funded. So congratulations on getting 220% funded. And I already have the album for free. But I might throw a few dollaroos.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much. So,
yeah, we'll see. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll...
Oh, go on.
Maybe it's all fake. I don't know.
a starving artist, you know?
Well, no one's paying me either. Hundreds into this podcast. But everyone, that has been the wonderful and beautiful Martin Adelsmith again, and that has been your host, Richard Martin, and yeah, I believe 4 years of the Bizarre Cast. So if you'd like to send me well wishes for getting it going for 4 years, you can reach me at the Bizarre Cast on Twitter and Instagram, and basically the bizarrecast at gmail.com, and personal account at the Fear Merchant on Twitter. So everyone, if you've made it this far, you haven't lost your mind. Thank you very much for listening, and myself and Martin bid you adieu until the next episode and season 5. There's going to be more episodes trickling out as they have been this year. So thank you everyone for your patience, etc., etc. And I will cut this rambling short. Thank you very much. See ya. Be safe. And don't be sorry. Catch you next time.
End of line.